There is something inordinarily ordinary about those pre-World War II musicals that set your feet to dancing and your voice to humming. You know the story, the classic tale of a boy and a girl in a theater in need of salvation. He works as a banker, but spends most of his time practicing dance routines. Then it happens. A rebirth, a love affair, and a cause for the betterment of all mankind. Sorry, can't tell you how it ends. That's called a spoiler. So you'll just have to head out to Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival's June 12th opening of Crazy for You, with fast-paced dialogue by Ken Ludwig, fantastic dances, great music by George and Ira Gershwin, and a musical written not in 1930, but in 1992, the same year that PSF was founded. But there's more than just a perfect musical. There's a sprinkling of Robin Hood and Maid Marian, the mystery of Irma Vep, private lives, and there is, of course, Shakespeare's Antony and Cleopatra, and the intriguing Henry IV, Part 1. To hear about this national must-know regional theater, the Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival, we welcome our friends, producing artistic director Patrick McKay and associate artistic director Dennis Razzi. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Happy, yeah.
Welcome, gentlemen. So, interesting your description there, George. My first question would be, it seems like a glorious way, actually, to open a summer of theater and revels and fear and fun with Crazy for You. But what led to the choice? Why that one? Why that piece? Well, it's a different musical than you've done in a while.
It is. And we've talked about that for, the last 4 or 5 years, we've done plays that really dig deep for our musical. Yeah. And we thought we'd give the audience a break.
Yeah. we thought we owed them some romance and comedy and a musical.
Yeah.
And
tap dancing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And to have a little fun and Crazy for You. You know, the director, so Gina Lamparello is going to direct. Now, this is a director who last year directed Richard II for us. That shows you her range. And Gina's been in 8 Broadway shows. And
many of which are musicals.
Many of which were musicals, and is also a director in her own right. And, you know, as she was having conversations with the designers about where to go with this, you know, every time they'd present an idea, her litmus test was, I don't know, is it fun? Is it going to be fun? That's the goal, is to make sure that it's a lot of fun, which, you know, fits well with the summer.
It seems like a perfect way to kick off the summer, actually. And we can move through the season, which is a wonderful mix, kind of chronologically. We also, I have to point out that I think it's kind of brilliant that we have Crazy for You kicking it off, and then Dennis, you'll be directing Private Lives later in the season.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy, and actually written in the period in which it represents, but kind of sets that tone of wit and style. Sans musical, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually a little bit of music in it because, you know, as you know, Noel Coward wrote lots and lots of songs and a few musicals, and there's some times in the play where the lead character, you know, goes to the piano and sings and plays the piano, and there's actually some Noel Coward songs that, you know, an offstage band is heard playing as they're sitting there on their balcony that they hear in the first act.
And I guess this is a bit of your break after directing a big, intense, fabulous musical like Ragtime last year. Not a break, a difference, change.
I know I've gone from a cast of 43, I think it was, to a cast of 5. So that's really going to be exciting for me to work with some really, really fine actors on a really fun play and do that intensely and not have to worry about keeping 40-some people happy.
And it's such a funny play, and it's sort of amazing. Dennis shared some information with our board recently. He was talking about how Noel Coward wrote the play in 4 days when he was sick with the flu in Asia. And he, it's just amazingly funny. And it's one of those plays where, you know, you could find yourself rolling in the aisles laughing. And our audience seems to already be onto that because it's selling like crazy.
It's selling like crazy for you.
Like crazy. That's right.
I've always loved the music of Noel Coward, really. He was, in fact, from what I know, he was very ill when he wrote the song don't put your daughter on the stage, Mrs. Worthington.
Right. Yeah.
But it's such a lighthearted, tricky little, raucous little piece.
It is.
Theater favorite.
And, you know, high comedy, these emotions that they're feeling are of volcanic proportions, and it's in the setting of comedy, so we have an awfully good time with it. But, I mean, high comedy, what makes it funny often is people working very hard their whole lives as characters to conform to certain social norms while being driven by the basest of human needs. And that contrast is funny.
That's where
you got this lightning eviscerating wit on top, but propelled by these, you know, volcanic passions.
Well, in thinking of that and something you had said earlier, Dennis, I mean, at this point with the Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival, I think one of the signature things, one of the things I think of with the festival, when you're looking at something like Private, I mean, it's five actors, but it is an intensely perfect writing. I mean, this is a fabulous script, as are all of them. But you've reached a point where, you know, you guys have the talent and the draw in the community. I don't know if our audiences, I'm sure they know it when they see it on stage, but are they aware that, you know, within the arts and theater community, this is a festival who I'm sure the auditions are looked forward to for ages. I mean, this is a place people want to work.
I think the word is getting out more and more and more that we've, you know, been able to attract artists at the highest caliber of our industry. And, you know, the audiences have figured it out. The media has started to figure it out. We've been in the Washington Post and the New York Times and, Playbill referenced, you referenced this, George, that Playbill described us as one of the must-know regional theaters.
Yeah.
So it's no longer a secret, which is wonderful.
And it has to make the choice of, I mean, I would imagine picking a season then becomes something that can be following your delight and not worrying as much, you know, as one can when one's starting out. Can you find the actors that can support it? Can the people do the work?
Right.
Now you've got the people to do the work.
Well, we work with a Broadway casting director who has connected us with a lot of these extraordinary artists. And that system has been working well for us over the past 7 or 8 years.
Well, it's no doubt that with your vision and the vision of the board and Dennis, that it really has become a world-class artist place to come and be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
And how is it, thinking of this season, again, it's an really interesting mix. You had said something, we were talking a little bit before we recorded here, came on the air. We're talking about rebels, we're talking about rebellion, but we were also talking about fun and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And a quote that I have here from you saying the season is designed to be transporting and talking about transcendence.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit how that feeds into the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the purpose of art, of course, holistically, is that we should come out of it feeling a little differently than we went into it, and that it should take us somewhere, take us somewhere in our imaginations, or take us somewhere within, or both, hopefully. And the season offers a lot of opportunities for all of those things. I mean, Crazy for You is transporting in that, you know, just one example, sitting in the auditions in New York when we were holding the callbacks for the principals, and the choreographer's putting them through their tap dancing paces, and this is a huge tap show. You know, we got all this extraordinary Gershwin music, but it's also a big tap musical. And, I mean, I thought the roof was going to blow off with the energy in that room, and that is transporting. I mean, that experience you have at the end of a certain kind of musical number that just sort of blows you through the back wall is really exciting. You know, Irma Vep is transporting in its own way, the mystery of Irma Vep, and you mentioned the word rebels, and I think in a way that's kind of a thematic thread through the season is in Crazy for You, the banker doesn't want to be the banker. He wants to rebel against that. He wants to be, you know, a hoofer. He wants to be a Broadway star. And when he goes out to the desert and he falls in love with this woman, she's also rebelling against, you know, what's going on out there. And in The Mystery of Irma Vep, the playwright was kind of rebelling and asking questions about what is theater. And, you know, he was the master of camp parody, Charles Ludlam was. And this is his most popular and really his funniest play. We've put a team of rebels on this as well. So Jim Helsinger will direct.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
right.
Christopher Patrick Mullen and Brad DePlanche will play the two roles.
Wow.
And, you know, these are three of the artists who have helped to construct the comedy pillar at Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival. And then Antony and Cleopatra. I mean, what better example could you have of people rebelling against what others think they should be doing? This is a fascinating pair. We have not lost interest in these folks over these intervening millennia.
And that's a, is that, have, has the festival done Antony and Cleopatra before?
10 years ago, okay, yes, right. And we usually wait at least 10 years now before we repeat a Shakespeare play. And, you know, if you're a huge theater that's producing, you know, 5-6 Shakespeare plays a year, you have to repeat them every 5 years. But we you know, because we do 2 or 3 a year, right, we can repeat them every 10 years. He only wrote so many.
No, it just seems a particularly timely and interesting choice. I was really excited to see it on the list.
Yes, it's a thrilling play.
It's kind of like Roman and Egyptian Game of Thrones.
Exactly. Yes, sure.
By the master.
Yeah, I mean, these are two people who have jobs, you know, running countries, and yet what draws them to each other winds up being just as powerful and eventually more powerful than that set of responsibilities. So time is fleeting for them and their love, and they try to live as fully as they can. So that comes back to this transcendent notion. Is I really think in Antony and Cleopatra, they're both trying to transcend the limitations that they experience around them, and they gamble everything on love.
Yes, a fabulous season. I must mention that. We'll talk more about it as we come back later on. But one of the things that I'm always amazed at is how you can do so many productions at the same time. And you're lucky you have a couple theaters there, but a couple of spaces.
Because Antony and Cleopatra's in rep, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
Right. It is. And that's absolutely amazing, especially, from what I understand, and I hope I read the information right, that Henry IV is really your extreme production, right?
Yes. We will. Yeah, happy to talk about that.
Yeah, we will when we come back. That's great, because the lineup is just wonderful. Let me just remind people, PSF Summer 2019 is Crazy for You, runs from June 12th to June the 30th. And then The Mystery of Irma Vep is June 20th to July 14th. Antony and Cleopatra, July 10th through August 4th. Private Lives, July 18th through August 4th. Henry IV, July the 24th to August the 4th. And then we also have The Adventures of Robin Hood and Maid Marian and Shakespeare for Kids.
So it's a full summer.
It is an absolute full summer. You don't have anything to do you, on July and August? Don't you go to the beach or something?
We have yet to get bored.
Yeah. And I'm curious, we may talk about this when we come back as well, just really quickly, the pairing of Antony and Cleopatra with Private Lives and Rep. Why those two in rep? I just find that intriguing.
Sure.
It seems it makes sense on some level. I can't quite.
Well, when we were first talking about it, we thought, gee, wouldn't that be a sexy pairing?
Okay. Yeah.
And different perspectives on the relationships between men and women. Uh-huh. And yet, you know, similar. I mean, there's certainly the battle of the sexes theme that kind of goes on in both plays.
The kind of level of wit and power and intelligence of the characters. Yes. Yeah.
But under that is real love. And one is Antony Cleopatra is a very serious look at it, and you know, Private Lives kind of spins that and, you know, looks at it in a darkly humorous way, but hilarious way. I mean, mm-hmm. Private Lives, we see so much of our own relationships, I think, in those pairings.
Great. Well, thank you. We'll hear more about the goings-on at Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival 2019. We're chatting with producing artistic director Patrick Mulcahy and associate artistic director Dennis Razzi. We'll be right back after this salient message.
WDIY runs on volunteer spirit. If you have an interest in becoming part of the volunteer team that keeps us up and running, let us know. There are opportunities in administration, special events staffing, fundraising, network or music programming, and more. Please visit our website, wdiy.org, and click on support. Follow the drop-down menu to volunteer for more information. Thanks.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon on WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we are chatting today with Patrick Mulcahy, the artistic director at Pennsylvania Shakespeare Festival, and Dennis Razzi, the associate artistic director. And it really is a fun and fearful season.
One extreme to the other, and we'll get to extreme. But just real quickly before we move on, to go back to that, the pairing of Antony and Cleopatra in Private Lives. Dennis, you were talking about the different takes on relationships and from different styles of the two pieces, but it's still at the end of the day so much about those relationships and something we can resonate with.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we were originally thinking that Antony and Cleopatra would be the same actors as, you know, the two leads in Private Lives, but it didn't turn out that way. Right. Which is kind of interesting, you know, that was our assumption going in, but you know, this way I think it you know shows the range of the company, you know, that the actors can you know play leads in very different shows, and it can be different people that you know might play supporting roles in one production and then you know play the lead roles in another, which I think is another you know really interesting way to go. But yeah, the relationships between men and women as explored by Noel Coward are, you know, so clever, and you know, a lot of it, you know, came from Noel Coward's personal relationship with Gertrude Lawrence, the famous English actress, who a lot of people thought that they were involved, but of course, you know, they were not romantically involved, but they were great friends, and. You know, when he wrote Private Lives, he absolutely was thinking that it was going to be himself and Gertrude playing the two lead roles. And, you know, ever since then, those two lead roles have been played by, you know, interesting kind of pairings of people. Like, you know, I saw Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor do it in 1983. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a landmark production. And then... the last one was Alan Rickman before he passed away, and Lindsay Duncan, which was a marvelous production of it. But you know, just seeing, you know, who those two people are going to be, and getting that glimpse inside of, you know, those marriages that we really want to know how they, you know, tick on the inside, or those relationships. And you know, Noel Coward was really giving us a peek into that when he first wrote the play in 4 days. When he was suffering from the flu in Shanghai.
I think it's also helpful to we've been throwing around this term rep, and just to share exactly what that looks like. So, you know, normally when we rehearse a play, the actors and the directors work together just on one play at a time for 3.5 weeks, and then it opens. And in rep, it's a longer period of time, but each day is split in half. So the actors are literally going back and forth between these two rooms
multiple times
and two worlds in the same day. And then, you know, we there's a day when we finally do both plays fully together in a designer run through. We do one play all the way through and the other play all the way through. So the actors, that's the first time they have to do both plays in one day at the same time, because they'll be doing that in the run. And then we open one, we open the other. So that it's really a very athletic. These are cultural athletes,
yes.
These folks who are doing this. It is quite a process. And I think we actually, you know, I think you actually get, you know, just that one more notch of even better work out of the actor, because they are so creatively alive in that process of working on these two very different plays at once.
And just for the audience, just to remind you, literally the cast are, it's not just two productions rehearsing together with some overlap. These are the same cast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Set right. of actors learning two very, very, very similar but very different play, very different right. styles, very different periods. Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's a thrill. It's exciting.
It is.
They earn their money.
And we got the idea from Shakespeare because,
right.
you know, they were working in rep because there was an appetite for, you know, different plays back then in the Elizabethan times. Just as we have an appetite for, you know, different television series and different films. And so in order to produce that, you know, quantity of work, they had to be working on, you know, lots of plays at once and rotating them so, you know, an audience could come in the next day and see a different play.
Right. Ah.
Right.
Which takes us to, in some ways, Henry the... The festival, one of my favorite parts of the festival is always the Extreme Shakespeare, the piece each summer that essentially, you guys can speak about it better than I, but actors are brought in, they know their lines, there's no director, they get, much like in the Bard's Day, they get together, they yeah. ransack the costume shop, they find props, they begin to rehearse, and whatever happens, happens, in the spirit of Shakespeare. But I was really impressed to see that you're giving Henry IV Part One to that process this year.
Yes.
Just because it's a huge, wonderful, rich, epic history play. But Can you talk a little bit about where yeah, that yeah. came from?
It's a brilliant play, and we've done it once. We did it 14 years ago. I had the pleasure of directing, and I was in it once a long time ago in the park in New York. And Joe Papp directed, and there were stars. And I was 22. And I was understudying Hal in that production, and it was a great introduction to both the profession and one of Shakespeare's best plays, I think. But this process is amazing to us, but it really is very much like what Shakespeare's company would have gone through. What the process Dennis just described, you know, Shakespeare's company would have had dozens of plays in their repertory and they would have to be ready to dust them off at a moment's notice, which is unfathomable to us today, how they managed to do that. But the
They didn't have iPhones.
They didn't have any of the tools that we had. They didn't have that as a distraction.
That's what I meant. Yeah, right. You could put more in your head.
Yeah, but yes, as you described, the actors. So normally, actors will often come to rehearsals having learned some of their lines, and they'll continue learning them in the process. As you know, I'm telling two actors this. But the. In this case, the actors have to come in with their lines learned so well that they could still do them if a train was coming at them. Mm-hmm. Because 4 days after they start the rehearsal process, they're in front of an audience. So instead
Four days.
So instead of 3.5 weeks, they have 4 days to put this all together. And then they're in front of an audience.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And it is quite an experience. And usually if you ask them how it's going about halfway through those 4 days, they'll say, I am never doing this again. But by the time they get to opening, they feel very empowered because they've made all the choices themselves, something that actors don't usually get to do, about the design, about what people are wearing, about, you know, if there is some world in particular that they're operating in, like in Pericles, they decided, we're going to set, you know, the brothel scene in a biker bar. So they get to make all of those decisions. And that comes with its own responsibility and challenges, but it's a thrill. I think one of the most exciting things about this production for me is that in the play, there are two characters, Hal and Hotspur, who are the sort of young talent that is emerging, and there's the question of who is going to get to run this country. Hal, of course, goes on to become Henry V. And his father, Henry IV, is the one on the throne right now. So Hal and Hotspur are ultimately the sort of next generation coming up. And in our production, those characters will be played by women. This is, you know, Sarah Bernhardt did this with Hamlet 100 years ago, but this is, you know, this is a conversation that our industry is having with itself in a lot of ways and with the audience. And in our case, what's interesting about it is that the next generation of leaders are at least embodied by or represented by women. And we think that there's some importance in that and some poignance in that. And that's intentional.
That'll be interesting to see. So you've made the choice that there are two women are playing Hal and Hotspur. They're cast as they're actors, actresses, but you're not directing,
right?
So you don't know what choices these two women and the rest of the company are going to make about two women playing Hal and Hotspur.
That's right. So the actress playing Hal, who was Mayrin Lee is her name. She was in Shakespeare in Love. She played the female lead in Shakespeare in Love, Viola last year, and she's done other things for us, including Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, etc. And she asked me, do I have an opinion about whether these should be women playing men or women playing women, etc. And I said, well, you know, here are some of the considerations that I'm aware of, is if we change it to women playing women, then we have pronouns to change all through the play, potentially. There's something about the father-son relationship that may be worth preserving, but there are all these rich opportunities the other way, too. And, there are books being written about this right now, about what all those rich opportunities are. So it's really in their hands. And it's in their hands whether every actor who's doing that is going to make the same decision, too, because this play is in their hands. And we don't necessarily expect with this production that, you know, they might all decide on certain unifying principles for the world in which they're functioning, or they may decide not to do that. I mean, we think that if you went to see a Shakespeare play in Shakespeare's time, you would have seen, you know, one costume that looked like something historic and one costume that looked very contemporary. They wore what they had,
yeah,
and they wore whatever sort of made them feel the way they needed to feel to bring this play to life. We think, you know, we really have scraps of information about what really happened. So even, you know, this word original practices is often used. And I think that we're sort of loosely applying what we think of as original practices in this production.
Of course, the precedence was set was set by Shakespeare himself on this idea.
Indeed.
But I wonder if it could happen to a contemporary play like Hello, Dolly, or Long Day's Journey into Night. I wonder if it would work.
Well, it has been done recently.
It has been done.
Yeah, you know, Oklahoma was done recently out in Oregon Shakespeare Festival, where the principal roles were, or the principal relationships were changed to same sex relationships.
Oh, so, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Interesting.
Right.
I wanted to ask you very quickly. I always wanted to see you guys on stage. And I understand you did something years
together,
ago.
Together, you mean, right?
Yes, together. Yes, as an actor. Is that a possibility in the future?
Well, I guess anything's possible.
If we could have two women playing Hal and Hotspur, anything.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we were in a very bloody production of Julius Caesar together.
1997.
Good for you.
And it was fun. Father Schubert was, you know, one of the last things I think he directed.
Yes, yeah.
But you never know.
Great.
I've moved in other directions.
Thank goodness, maybe. I don't know.
An actor's life.
Not for us, but for you.
Right.
Just reminding everyone that subscription packages are still available. Single tickets certainly are as well. All you need to do is go to pashakespeare.org.
And they sell quickly, so do
and
it
they
quickly.
Do, yes. Of course, you can call the box office as well.
But any last thoughts? Fear and fun.
Fear and fun, rebels and rebellion. But it's mostly a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think this season is really designed that way to inspire and refresh and renew. So,
very exciting, very provocative. Yeah. It's really, we're really looking forward to it.
And the more of them you see, the more of that rich experience you get.
Yeah.
This is George Miller, and with Kate Scuffle, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. You are with, of course, WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, where you will always have many choices, real voices. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis, and thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.